First off, I'd like to thank the elders for letting me and Tyler and Blake speak tonight. And did you ever have your friends over to your house whenever you were a kid? Well, I had my friends over in Clarksville on a daily basis, and that was only because I was the kid with the trampoline. I was the kid who had the fun stuff, and I'm sure my mom really hated that sometimes. And well, me and my dad built a fence in the backyard, and the back side of the fence was about 8 feet tall. And so we would push the trampoline to the back fence, and we'd jump off of the back and jump on the trampoline and see what kind of crazy stuff we could do. And sometimes whenever we would get on top of the fence, we'd fall off. And on one side, we'd fall off, and we'd fall, and we'd hit the ground, and it'd be very painful. And on the other side, we'd fall, and we'd the other guys in the yard would try and catch us or brace the fall. And whenever I was brainstorming for this lesson, I thought about a lesson I've heard a couple times about straddling the fence between the way the devil or the world influences you to live and the way that God or the Bible wants you to live. And that's precisely what I'm planning on speaking tonight. And there are two sides of the fence, the world side and then God's side. Now, the influence of the world on us is very strong, and we will fall into temptations at multiple points in our life because nobody here is sin-free, and I don't think that anybody in this room would claim that they were sin-free. And the reason that sin is so tempting to us is because it's fun, it's careless. Most of us, we don't want to admit that most sins are fun, but that's why they're tempting. If sins didn't appeal to us in some way, the sins wouldn't be tempting, and we'd have no problem going on the path of God, and we would have no problem getting to heaven. Now, temptations are just something that we're going to have to learn how to get through, and we're going to have to learn how to pull through the sins, and that takes time. And some of the older people in the audience might be able to pull through more sins than the younger ones of us. The younger ones of us, we might get discouraged whenever we fall into a sin, or we might feel like we're worthless or we're alone, and then we'll try and get through that sin by ourselves, because we don't want to tell anybody, we don't want anybody to know, and we want to keep it to ourselves. And that's a very hard thing to do, because whenever you try and do something all by yourself, or like whenever you try and teach yourself something, it's going to be very hard. Now, if you had a mentor or other people to help you get through it, that'd be a lot easier, which is why whenever we do fall into sin, we need to talk to our friends, our parents, our elders, and talk to God mostly, so we can pull through that sin and we can become closer to God ultimately. Now, the devil is going to do anything he possibly can to drag us down to hell with him. And whenever we do fall into sin, he's going to keep going, he's going to keep tempting, and now he knows what makes us tick. Now he knows how he can get us. And whenever he tries to drag us down to hell, most of us think that hell's his kingdom, that hell's where he rules. But truthfully, hell's also his punishment. Like it says in Matthew 25, verse 41, where Jesus says, "Then he will also say to those on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels." He mentions that it's prepared for the devil, and that means that at one point, we all know that Satan was in heaven. He was one of the highest ranking angels back when he was Lucifer. And now Satan is in his punishment, his eternal suffering. And he just wants to drag us down there with him. He just wants us to fall just as hard as he did. But God is stronger than Satan. We all know it. But there are a few people think that Satan and God are equals. Some people might even think that Satan's more powerful than God because he has no morals, I guess you'd say. But God created everything. He's the beginning. He's the end. And Satan has to know this at some points. Like in Job 2, verses 4 through 7, whenever he goes to God asking about permission. So Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin, yes. All that a man has he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, he is in your hand, but spare his life." So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord, struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. In this verse, or verses, it shows that Satan went to God to ask if he could put pain on Job, to ask if he could strike him with those boils. And which means that if Satan would have been able to do that on his own, God would have just pushed him aside, said, "No." Most likely, he would have just been like, "I didn't say you could do this, and I'm not going to let you." Because God is most powerful. And at that point, Satan had to realize, at least for a few moments, that he has to yield to God's power. Now, most of the time, we think of the devil as just pure evil. But the devil's smart. He's a very smart being, and he'll do, and he'll get you whenever you're down. He'll get you when you're alone. He'll get you whenever you're in your worst moments, and he'll get us when we're vulnerable. And sometimes we are going to fall into that. And if we can just remember to turn to God and our brothers and sisters in Christ, we can keep away from the temptations of the world. And now on the other side of the fence, there's the Bible's way of influencing it on us. Everyone knows the basic guidelines that God has given us on how we need to live, and know that the good way to go is the way God has instructed. But the way God has instructed us to go is never going to be the easiest. It's never going to be as easy as just falling into the temptations, going with the crowd, falling into the peer pressure, and just living the easy life, the fun life. And God wants us to get through temptations. I mean, God lets the devil tempt us to make us stronger, to bring us closer to Him. And if we go to God and ask Him to help us get through a temptation, most likely He's going to do anything in His power to help us get through it. And we all know that God has all the power. And He can get us through anything that He wants to get us through, anything we ask Him to get us through. As some of us know, the interstate, it's a very easy, wide road, easy to navigate. You can just go down the interstate at a nice, fast speed, and that's the way most of us are going to go. Now, there's also the back roads that are twisty, bumpy, and really narrow, hard to go through. And whenever I think about these two roads, it kind of reminds me of the paths of God, of God's way and Satan's way. Satan's path is nice and wide, with good wide turns, no big obstructions in the way. And that's going to be the easy way to go, and that's going to be the way that a lot of people in the world go. And then there's God's way, which is twisty, narrow, bumpy, but with God's help and with the help of other people in the church, that road can be nice and smooth with a nice car going down it. Now, even Jesus had a statement like this in Matthew 7:13-14, where he says, "Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go by it. Because the narrow gate is difficult, it is the way that leads to life, and there are few who find it." Now, in this passage right here, Jesus says that many are going to go Satan's way. And we need to go out, and we need to go onto the interstate, we need to get some people and pull them off. We need to get out of our comfort zone, and we need to get them to take the exits and get back on the back roads and go God's way, go the harder way, which proves to have the most sweet gift of all. Now, whenever we're straddling the fence between God's side and Satan's side, it's extremely displeasing to God. And He would rather you be on either side or the other, which means He would rather you be in the easy life and the sinful life and the terrible life than have you be trying to stay in the middle. And in Revelation 3, verses 15 through 16, it states something like this. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I could wish you were cold or hot. So then, because you are lukewarm, neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Even Jesus says in this verse, in this quote, that he hates it whenever you're in the middle. That he would rather you be on Satan's side than trying to stay in the middle, trying to stay neutral. And then, and he would rather you be with him, as we all know. And if you are straddling the fence, Satan's going to be ripping at you, trying to rip you off the fence, trying to make you fall down and feel as much pain as he did. And it's gonna be easy to just let Satan drag you down and let Satan take you down to hell with him. Now, God's not gonna try and rip you off the fence. He's gonna have his hand out. He's gonna be waiting for you to grab it so that he can push Satan away from you and let you come to paradise with him. One very good example of straddling a fence would be Pilate, Matthew 27, 24 through 26. When Pilate saw that he could not prevail at all, but rather that a tumult was rising, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. You see to it. And all the people answered and said, His blood be on us and on our children. Then he released Barabbas to them, and he went and scourged Jesus. He delivered him to be crucified. Pilate tried to say that it wasn't his fault Jesus went to the cross, that he couldn't have done anything, that he had to go with the crowd, that the crowd was making him do it. But truthfully, he could have done anything, and he could have done anything he could to keep Jesus off the cross, but he tried to wash his hands and say, no, I'm not awful like these people, and I'm not going to go against them and have myself killed, most likely. He tried to stay on the fence, neither or. And sometimes we might try to wash our hands and say, there's no way we could have gotten away from this sin, there's no way we could have not done this sin because everybody was doing it, but there's always a way. There's always a way to get away from the sin, and that way is God. God is the way. God will always help us through everything that we need, and He'll do anything He can to help us. So we need to make the decision as soon as we realize it. As soon as we realize Jesus and be ready when Judgment Day comes or when our time comes. Since it can be in just a few moments, take God's hand, jump into His arms, get off the fence, and get on God's side so that we will be prepared and have assurance when Jesus does return. So think back to when we discussed me and my friends jumping off the fence and falling off. When we fall onto one side, we hit the ground, and we get hurt, like Satan wants us to. And on the other side, we fall, and we fall into the hands of God, and God is going to brace our fall. He's going to catch us, and He's going to help us along the way. Now, since Judgment Day could come at any minute, choose as soon as you realize Jesus Christ and be baptized into our family so that one day you can see Him. If you realize this tonight, or if you just need the prayers of the church to help you pull through a sin, we will have an invitation offered by Tyler at the end of his lesson. Thank you.
In heaven they're singing a wonderful song, a theme that shall never grow old. And glorified millions are singing it now in that beautiful city of gold. They're singing the songs of salvation, a story that never grows old. and glorified millions are singing it now in that beautiful city of gold. We read of its beauty, but somehow we know its glory has never been told. But think of the rapturous singing up there in that beautiful city of gold. They're singing the songs of salvation, a story that never grows old. And glorified millions are singing it now in that beautiful city of gold. What music we'll hear when the ransomed of earth shall enter that heavenly fall, when all redeemed singers shall join in that song in that beautiful city of gold. They're singing the song of salvation, a story that never grows old. And glorified millions are singing it now in that beautiful city of gold. Following Blake's message, we'll sing 453.
Many of you here have seen the movie Fireproof. And then in the movie Fireproof, it stars Caleb Holt, who is a firefighter in Albany, Georgia. He holds the motto, "Never leave your partner in the fire." However, his relationship with his wife at home, Catherine, is suffering to the point where she needs a divorce. Caleb and Catherine fought each other for their problems in their relationship. Among Catherine's complaints are Caleb's addiction to internet pornography, and the sum of money, $24,000, that he has saved up to buy himself a new boat when Catherine's disabled mother is in the hospital and can't afford the equipment she needs to survive, and which insurance does not cover. When Caleb tells his father, John, about the impending divorce, John challenges Caleb to a 40-day commitment called the Love Dare. Caleb agrees. Initially, Catherine doubts Caleb's sincerity in his attempts to win her back due to his half-hearted attempts to completing the Love Dare. But Caleb continues with encouragement from his father and his close friend Michael, who encouraged him to become a new born-again Christian. In the meantime, at the hospital where she works, Catherine begins flirting with a doctor named Dr. Keller. He doesn't know that she's married because she has stopped wearing her wedding ring. She informs him about his mother's medical situation. Around this time, Caleb injures his arm rescuing a girl from a burning house and is brought to Catherine's hospital. There, Dr. Keller is informed that Caleb is Catherine's wife. As he continues the 40-day challenge, Caleb begins doing more household chores and running errands for Catherine, and he leaves her roses and that kind of stuff. Caleb even smashes his computer to pieces to avoid that temptation of internet pornography. Nevertheless, Catherine is still intent on divorce and still has that on her mind. This is an example of a broken-down marriage in society today. And tonight, as I talk about marriage, I want to talk about our marriage with Christ. And as Christians, when we're baptized, we were married with Christ through baptism. And the aspects of being married with a man and a wife are the same aspects you need to have as being married with God. I have three main points in a marriage with your spouse that you need to have: love, let yourself go, and let them know. And as you see through these three aspects of marriage, that can also be translated through our relationship with Christ. In Ephesians 5, verse 21 through 25, it says, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ has loved the other church and gave himself for her." Sometimes in society today, we like to think that this verse is telling us that the man is more important than the wife in everything in the marriage, and that the wife is just there for just a buddy, I guess. But that's not the case. Somebody once told me that the husband is the head of the house, but the wife is the neck. And without the neck, the head can't stay up. God's plan for male and female roles does not diminish or minimize either's role. In a relationship with your spouse, if you think you're more powerful than her, or that she isn't as good as you, you're not going to have that good relationship that everybody wants. The same is with Christ. Sometimes we like to think that we're more important than Christ, but that's not the case. Christ is way more important than we are, and we're just a step down to Him. Also, you've got to let yourself go in a marriage. If you don't let yourself go for your spouse, and you just keep everything to yourself, and you don't do what she needs, then how are y'all going to have a good marriage? In Matthew 16, verse 24, it says, "Then Jesus said to His disciples, 'If anyone desires to come after Me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow Me.'" In Fireproof, Caleb didn't give himself up in the marriage. He had $24,000, almost enough to pay for his wife's mom's medical equipment, but he didn't want to do that because he wanted a new boat. He didn't let himself go in that marriage, so it was unsuccessful. If we don't let ourselves go for Christ, we're not going to have a successful relationship with Him, and therefore heaven is going to be a long shot for us. Also, you've got to let them know. In Philippians 4, verse 6, it says, "Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God." In marriage, you got to stay connected with your spouse at all times. And in Fireproof, Caleb and Catherine didn't talk to each other like a good couple should. They're always yelling at each other, and they blamed each other for their bad marriage. Well, in a marriage, you've got to be thankful for her, and you've got to tell her on a daily basis that you're thankful for her and what she does for you. And also, you've got to tell them what they need, what you need. If you don't let them know what you need, how are they going to be able to help you? That's also what a wife is for, is to help you, or a husband. And it's the same way in our relationship with God. If we don't thank God on a regular basis that we're thankful for Him, then how is He going to know that we are? And if we don't tell Him what we need on a regular basis, then how is He going to know what we need? The end of Fireproof ends like this. Catherine learns that her mom's medical equipment had been paid for in full, and she thought it was Dr. Keller who donated all the money. So she took him out to eat, and they were talking, and she figured out that Dr. Keller only gave $300, and that the other $24,000 was given by Caleb. So it ended up like every good movie does. She gets her wedding ring back, she runs to the firehouse, and they hug, and it ends all great. But that's the way sometimes relationships with God end that way. Or start the way Fireproof did, to where it started off really good, but then it dwindled off, and then you didn't have that fire for your spouse, and you don't have that fire for God. Right now, tonight, if your relationship with God is suffering, if your marriage with God is dying down or dwindling, and you need to be remarried with God, and you need the prayers of the church, or if you're not a Christian and you haven't been married to God through baptism yet, there will be an invitation song after Tyler's lesson, and I ask you to please come then. Thank you.
Not a step will I take without Jesus. is the vow that my heart has made. Though I often am tempted to leave him, yet unto him my heart is stayed. Not a step will I take, not a step without him will I go. He will lead me along to that beautiful home over there. Not a step will I take without Jesus as I travel upon life's way. Though temptations may be all around me, I will follow my Lord each day. Not a step will I take, not a step without him will I go. He will lead me along to that beautiful home over there. Not a step will I take without Jesus. Where he leads, I can never stray. From the path that will lead me to glory, to that land of eternal day. Not a step will I take, not a step without him will I go. He will lead me along to that beautiful home over there.
337 will be our song of encouragement after Tyler's message.
Thank you, Stewie and Blake, for opening up today, and thank you, Mr. Wiles, for leading songs. And I'm going to tell you a story about the Rose Bowl, 1929, New Year's Day. UCLA played Georgia Tech in Pasadena, California. One play, a UCLA player named Roy Regels recovered a fumble. As he picked up the fumble, he started running with the ball. But somehow in the commotion, he was hit and spun around, and so he started running the ball the wrong way. He ran 65 yards before one of his teammates, Benny Lom, tackled him at their own 1-yard line. UCLA was unable to get anything started on offense, so they had to punt. Georgia Tech blocked the punt and forced a safety. After the second quarter, the players filed off the field. UCLA players went in the locker room, sat on the benches, and on the floor. Roy Regels grabbed a towel and a chair, went over to a corner, put the towel on his head, and cried like a girl. Coach Nibs Price came in the locker room and sat down. Usually, when you're losing at halftime because of a stupid play like that, you have a lot to say to your team. But he was quiet. Finally, when the timekeeper came in and announced that they only had 3 minutes to get back on the field before the third quarter started, Coach Price looked up and said, "Men, the team that started the first half will end the second." And they all stood up and walked out. With Regal still in the corner crying, Coach Price walked over and said, "Roy, did you hear me? You're going to have to play the second half." He goes, looks up at Coach Price with eyes full of tears and said, "Coach, I can't do it. I can't do it to save my life. I've ruined you, I've ruined me, and I've ruined the University of California." Coach Price looked at Roy and said, "Roy, the game is only half over. Go out there." You can ask some of those Georgia Tech players, and they'll tell you they have never seen a man play a second half of football
as Roy Regals did that day. This story reminds me of a lot how when Christians mess up, they just want to sit down and cry. And they don't even want to try to make up for what they did. If you would please turn to your Bibles in 2 Kings chapter 5. This story is about Naaman. Now Naaman was a man who commanded the army of Syria. The Syrian army had many great battles won through Naaman because of God was on Naaman's side. Although Naaman had leprosy, the king still had Naaman as a favorite. At this time, Syrian raiders had invaded Israel and captured a little girl who worked for Naaman's wife. One day the little girl said, "I wish that my master would go to the prophet of Israel because he can cure him of his leprosy." So Naaman went and told his king, saying, "Thus and so spoke the girl from Israel." And the king of Syria said, "Go, and I will send a letter with you." And so he went, taking 750 pounds of silver, 150 pounds of gold, and 10 pairs of clothes. And the letter to the king of Israel said, "With this letter I present my servant Naaman. Please cure him of his leprosy." When the king of Israel saw this, he said, "Am I God to give and take life?" He said, "This man must try to pick a fight with me." And he tore his clothes in dismay. When Elijah, the man of God, heard this, he said, "Why are you in dismay? Tell the man to come to my house." And so Naaman went with his horses and chariots to Elijah's house. And Elijah waited outside of his house. Naaman waited outside of Elijah's house. Instead of Elijah coming outside to meet Naaman, he sent a servant, telling the servant to say, "Go to the Jordan River and dip 7 times, and then you will be cured." Naaman was upset because he said, "I thought that he would come out and call upon the name of the Lord and wave his hands over me and cleanse me. Naaman walked away in rage. He was upset because Elijah told him to do something so simple for something that seemed so hard. One of his servants stopped him, saying, "Master, if the man had told you to do something hard, certainly you would have done it. But why are you complaining about such an easy task?" He said, "Go, wash, and be cured." So Naaman changed his mind and went to the Jordan River and walked and dipped 7 times. And his skin was clean like a baby's. Naaman and his entire party went to look for Elijah. And when Naaman standing in front of Elijah, he said, "Now I know that there is no God except for the one of Israel. So please accept these gifts from your servant." See, God told Naaman through Elijah to do a simple task. But Naaman thought that you had to do something very spectacular to do something that seems so hard. See, until we realize that what God wants us to do is what we have to do to be clean or to get to heaven, we're never going to be clean. Sometimes what God asks us what to do, it may seem hard, or it may seem out of our way, or we may just not want to do it. But dedication is when you do whatever he asks you to do whenever he tells you to do it and how he tells you to do it. And no matter what happens, you may mess up because everybody messes up. You may mess up along the way that's so hard that you may think that it's too much for me to recover from this. I went out there and I've ruined myself. You don't need to think like Roy Regals did in that locker room. You need to do what his coach if Somebody needs to come to you like his coach did and tell you that you still have time left in this game to make up for what you did. Because we do at this time. If you've messed up, we can ask God to fix it together as we stand and sing.